going to bring this down a little bit because obviously I barely get over the podium here. Okay, our next speaker has been a longtime audio broadcast engineer and a project manager, managing venue host broadcasts and technical setups in operation teams for several Olympics. He also managed and or engineered broadcast audio for the NBA, the NHL, NFL, and regional events, and in prior lives directed new media business development at QVC, and he also owned a laser production company. He joined LAVO in early 2015 after a 12-year consulting and contract engineering career. Please welcome Mr. Bill Bennett.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Hi. It is nice to be back in Madison. I actually used to engineer the broadcast for WJR's coverage of the Michigan Wolverines football games, so we used to come here pretty often. And win or lose, this town has a party every night there's a game. So it's an awesome town to visit. So the topic is the virtual radio studio. Although you may find some of these topics kind of blend into television as well. As a show of hands, how many people are in radio right now? Okay, awesome. That's great. Definitely, and we got to have some time for QA afterwards, I'm sure, because there'll be some interesting questions probably from what you see. First, I'll give you a little bit of introduction about who LAVO is, the company, because it's not much of a household name in the States. A little bit about me, just so you know my perspective, and then a little bit of history of how technology has been disruptive in the broadcast studio before, and kind of how we think it's going to be in the future. We'll have a few examples of what's available now from a virtualization standpoint, and then maybe a little bit longer down the road what your TOC might look like in the future. So here we go. I'm told the green button opens the neighbor's garage door, so I'm going to hit the red one. Okay, yeah, so about me. I'm more of a production engineer, not a engineer. Started with WJR in Detroit through a great guy who some of you may know, may rest in peace, Ed Buderbaugh. Thumb up. Yeah, he started mowing the lawn there. That was an 80-acre job for a high school kid, which is pretty fun. But it's evolved to moving towards the Olympics and managing host broadcast, what are like pool feeds for Olympic venues and so that was a kind of another process more towards radio. It's audio, but even if your customers are on television, you don't know. It's really more just voice in that regard. So that's why we think it's more like radio. And then joined LAVO about 3 years ago after a 12-year freelance career. So I've been in radio and television. Was also an executive producer at QVC. So I have some content-oriented phrases sometimes. That's where that comes from. So about LAVO, more interesting than me. Let's see, red button. There we go. Okay, right. So we're a European company originally, headquartered in Rastatt, Germany. We have about 300 people worldwide, about 30 people in the States across physical offices in Toronto, New York, and L.A., and then other people are kind of at large, work from their home or co-working spaces, what have you. And we have some very happy, very big customers in the States. From the brands you see there are all customers for our audio products. We also have a very large IP-based growing video environment. But we're going to talk about audio here specifically. Read all the fine print there. Privately held company started by Simon LAVO, and Philip LAVO is our president now. Good people, good, nice group of people. And they're Germans, so they are OCD. They are very, very focused and punctual and great to work with in that regard. Real quickly, I'll pass only a couple more slides on this. NPR in the United States is our biggest customer, I think, or close to it. And the whole infrastructure they built in D.C. They use our products for the audio routing and the consoles. There's like 30 consoles there, and MADI and AES-67. We're big fans of AES-67 because of its interoperable nature. So it's also a tongue-twisted kind of word to get out there. So. And I just love this big glass window they have here. That separates the studios from the control area. It's just kind of a nice nice place they've built there. They're in D.C. Some examples of some more of our audio products. These are at ESPN. There's a few consoles there. That's their audio suites. If you're listening to Saturday Night Live, you're listening to our stuff. If you're in the house or on the air, listening through on television, they're using our consoles. QVC is a big customer there for our stuff. But we do little things, too, like a little radio station at KWVA and University of Oregon. So, and control and audio monitoring software, stuff that monitors, there's logic built in. We do a lot of software-centric design. So if you're monitoring audio circuits and they're scheduled to have audio and they go dead, there's a problem, the alarms go off, and they're voice-synthesized alarms. So you actually have speakers that start announcing overhead exactly what the problem is. So instantly you know what the problem is. But if there's audio that's out on a circuit that's not booked, no alarms go off because it's like, well, nothing's supposed to be here. So, okay, enough about that stuff. Virtualization. Kind of a fun word. I swear the more I say virtual, it'll become real one day. But everybody knows what virtualization is in the IT world, right? I mean, a great example is, although in this room it may be a dangerous question, how many people know the exact physical street address where your email is sitting right now? Okay, one. See, there's always somebody. Okay, you know where your server is. Yeah, so basement or maybe under your desk at work. But for the most part, we don't know because it's in a cloud now and it's at a server farm somewhere. We probably know who the server farm is, or maybe they're buying service from another server farm. And that server farm may have your data replicated at another farm, and it may even be, you may have an email hosted right now in Canada or even across some transatlantic link, although not so likely that distance. It's called the cloud nowadays. But we've been talking about it for years. It's just... virtual hosting and overlay wide area networks. So it's not new, and the IT world has made a lot of money by saving a lot of money using COTS hardware for this, usually Windows-based or Linux-based boxes or types of proprietary hardware sometimes, but that costs more. Commercial off-the-shelf stuff is really usually the cheapest way to go. So it's been working for them, and our folks have been wondering at Lavo, maybe might that work for radio? So, and we think so. So this is like imagine this is your broadcast audio air chain processing kind of environment. Now, this is more of something you might see in a recording studio, but you still have your patch bays. There's a lot of discrete boxes that do processing or codecs or hybrids. Almost each function seems to have its own box. Each box has its own power supply, hopefully two of them. Each box has its own connectors on the back, digital or AES 3 or maybe 67 or something else, and that connects to something else. It gets to be quite a mess and also gets rather expensive. It generates a lot of heat, and if you need to fix something, you've got to take a box out, unbolt it, bolt in a new one, and call UPS. So although that's really cool because you have a box you can touch, I'm sorry, I'm booming a microphone here. Okay. But the other thing, the thing is, you don't always want to touch all these boxes because it gets to be a hard maintenance problem. And good luck adjusting one of these if you're not in the studio at the time. If you're away someplace, like at a convention, you got to have somebody else turn those knobs. So to move into a virtual world, you have to do a couple of things. Those boxes all have to go away. And also, you have to start trusting your IP connectivity. You have to be really comfortable with audio over Ethernet or audio over an IP routing system of some sort. There's a bunch of standards out there. AES 67 Ravenna is, again, our favorite. But there's been some out there a long time, like CobraNet and Dante. Dante is huge in the live sound environment. And LiveWire and QLAN and WheatNet, WheatNet IP, I should say. So there's a lot of standards out there also. That's the beauty about standards. There's so many of them. But get used to seeing more RJ45s. In the concept of moving out all these boxes and moving them into applications, we've actually kind of already seen that happen in more recent years. If you kind of recognize a lot of these things on the screen, a GPS device or a cassette recorder kind of thing or a compass or a camera or a Rolodex. I don't even know if Rolodex is still in business. They have a whole single kind of commonality to them. It just happens that they all have been migrated to, exactly, you're holding it up, applications. Applications that are running on your smartphone right now and a whole lot of other apps, too, that you use probably on a daily basis. We call that dematerialization, and that is really reducing the physical atoms and moving them into bits. And that's not a term of my own. Nicholas Negroponte back in the 90s, he's the founding director of the MIT Media Lab. He used that phrase, migrate atoms to bits. And it's really kind of what we're talking about right here. The other cool thing is when you have all of these applications running together on a single platform, or a networked collection of platforms, you get to exchange a lot of metadata, and you can edit a video, you can do some voiceover on that video, you can then publish it to a couple of hosting sites, all while you're sitting there on a chair using your phone, and so much more. You can build whole PowerPoint presentations and RFQs, RFPs, sitting at your smartphone, in two thumbs. So that whole exchange of metadata is other a really cool, and not just metadata, but real content. Like another thing, somebody sends you a voicemail, and you got to send it to somebody at work. Here, listen to this, attach it, go. So, I opened the garage door, didn't I? Okay, there we go. So anyway, right, smartphone. Okay, so you get that. And it's kind of happened before. If you remember back in radio, when we had a studio filled with a lot of big, cool-looking devices, one-inch tape, quarter-inch tape, open reel Atari machines, mag tape in that regard, but also RDAT and ADAT, a few little digital attempts out there, analog cart machines and digital cart machines like Digicart, and records. Now, the hipsters are bringing back the records, so some of you are putting vinyl back into the studios, which is kind of fun, actually. Total aside, but I was at Audio Technica's offices in Ohio last summer, and they do some local repair there, and it was unbelievable. They had all these turntables, I want to say record players, right, but turntables with USB ports and Bluetooth logos on them. They were Bluetooth turntables. That's just, wow. So anyway, all of this stuff, ultimately one day somebody said, hey, wait, we could do all of this stuff off a hard drive. Why don't we consider digitizing this audio and putting it into a computer, and it would really simplify things. And that's ultimately what happened. And for the most part, your playout's coming off of a hard drive now, right? So, and that gives you a lot more capability. So the playout hardware boxes became apps already over the last few decades. Of course, now we also have the audio production is being done completely on a computer, really. I don't think anybody's editing tape at all with razor blades. I have this theory that the Band-Aid sales for radio stations have plummeted over the years. So, because who's buying Band-Aids? Who's cutting themselves with editing tape? And, of course, you trust usually a Windows or maybe a Linux box, maybe an Apple product to run your automation and keep the FCC happy with logging. So we're getting more comfortable with the computer being in charge of things. And then also at the same time, the computers have been getting a little bit faster, right? Or a whole lot faster. How many teraflops or MIPS or whatever do you find now on an i7, which is a pretty standard, faster Intel chip now, versus a Pentium 4 of just maybe 10 or 15 years ago? So, and it's only going to get better. So there's a lot of unutilized capacity within those hardware boxes. Why not put them to use? So now here's kind of an example of what we will consider a virtualized layer or reinvention of a studio. This is, again, radio, so television would be a little bit different. But, of course, just a reminder, right, you've probably got a computer in there doing playout. You've got sound cards connecting into that, either physical cards or USB interfaces or something like that. Maybe FireWire if it's a Mac or something. You've got analog headphones, microphones, speakers. Ultimately, we are still analog critters, right? So until we have a digital port built into us, we're still going to need those things in the corner. And you got a console, right? Something with a bunch of faders on it. But you got these boxes over here on the right. You've got the your IP codec or ISDN codec or something like that. You've got a telephone hybrid or two and some voice processing. Certainly, you're probably doing some stream encoding nowadays. And you've got your air chain processing, your air processor. And that may be in the studio or down the road or even at the transmitter site. So that's kind of the current state. Let's take a shot of that and go forward. How do you virtualize that? Well, you can maybe see where this is going. Those physical boxes all have to become applications now. They all have to become software. And when they become software, you start finding a lot more flexibility with them, with how the apps work, how you can interlink the apps together, and how you can control them. So you just kind of have to say goodbye to your hardware there and just start putting listings on eBay. somebody will buy them. So let's look. Okay, so like here we go. This computer, maybe we add another computer to do a few more things in the studio. We've still got sound cards and analog gear. That's a little different. But now we've got all these apps. So let's put all those applications on the computer. And then we still have the sound card, right? We're not entirely without some analog connectivity. However, we might suggest, instead of a sound card, considering using something a little more contemporary like a AOIP to analog interface. In this case, an AES-67 virtual sound card that you could run on the computer that handles routing of audio from the applications that are on the PC, routes the audio onto the Ethernet connection, and it kind of streams on the Ethernet connection you want on the PC. It allows you to pick those off and bring those streams into the computer. So it's kind of a audio routing traffic cop, virtual sound card. Certainly, they're out there for other standards like Dante and so on. One thing we have noted in our testing, however, is that you will get some, depending on the amount of processing you're doing, if you're doing a lot of voice processing in the computer and you're using the computer for monitoring and processing at the same time in the main studio, you may start seeing delays, or your talent might start hearing delays in the tens of milliseconds. Some can hear that. Sometimes it bothers them. Some cannot hear that. If they really are really famous jocks, they're already deaf anyway. So, you know, their cans have burned their ears out long ago. We make some hardware, and other products are out there, too, that allow you to have actual DSPs inside this AES-67, the analog box, so that you can interface your mics, headphones, and speakers with a sync, within sync to the processing that's going on in a PC. So, you know, the processors are faster, you know, the Intel chips and so on, but they're not yet fast enough to be effectively a straight wire. So that is, of course, still a benefit of hardware, but it's coming online pretty fast. So there's that. And the other cool thing about these microphones and speakers and stuff, this is what I'm about to show you is kind of a very fun, unscheduled plug test. Still, those are the analog bastions, right? Microphones with an XLR connector on the back of it, speakers with an XLR connector on it. And monitor speakers and headphones with quarter inch. Of course, thanks to Apple, not anymore. They're all going to have to be wireless. But what you don't see is too many microphones with AOIP coming right out of the mic, or speakers with an AOIP connection going in, or headphones with a native AOIP connection. But you're starting to. Genelec makes some nice speakers, for instance, that are AES-67 compatible. You just plug the Ethernet right into it. And then a few months ago, again, when I was at Audio Technica, they were showing me a new product that was physically the only one in the States, a studio mic for radio that instead of the back having an XLR connector on it, it had an RJ45 connector on it, which was really cool. I didn't know they were planning this. So we just set up my gear, we plugged in a little switch, and I'm not kidding, that really is a Netgear $20 or $30 switch. We plugged the mic into it. The mic was powered over Ethernet, it was PoE, so there is a power inserter between the mic and the switch, but that's all it's doing. And plugged it into the same switch that my laptop and some of our audio gear was plugged into, and they just said, okay, punch in this one IP address. And I did, and up came their logo, and I thought, wait a minute, I'm not on your network yet. Where's this coming from? Is this coming from the... Uh-huh. They started nodding. The mic has a web server built into it. You know, it's really cool. A branded web server built into it at that. So, and then I sparked up our software, and it could immediately see the stream that the mic was kicking out, and I put it right into the mix, patched it just like if it was plugged into the mic port on the laptop. I was like, oh my gosh, this is cool. So hopefully one day this thing hits the market. They've had Dante mics before anyway, so it's not like it's that new of a market. The other cool thing is if it's digital, you can change the color of the cue ring, right? I mean, it's blue right now, but what if you need it to be blue one day and green the next, or red the next hour? Or you tell a talent, okay, don't use the blue mic, go to the red one. Or you switch up your studio mics by the hour based on what type of show you're doing, and color coding it could be helpful with that. So we don't really know what all these digital things are going to give us. We have some ideas, right? But until you start trying, you don't know. So anyway, that's fun with IP. And native IP at that. So why virtual, right? This is a good question because you're thinking, well, what we got working now is working now, and we just spent a heck of a lot of money to get it to work now. So I'm going to go home for the night and not worry about this. Well, Yeah. Virtual, any kind of migration to something new may give you a few headaches at first, but usually they're for the better. In this case, a software, it's so software-centric that it's highly dynamic to a changing workflow. Software can easily be updated. If you have some application and you need some new feature that the manufacturer has and you've got a new show coming down the pike, it literally can be just a phone connection, or a phone connection, just a quick internet connection download, and you're good to go. And if you don't need to upgrade it, well, you know, turn that feature off because you want to keep your software stable, of course, too. Reduce cost and complexity because you're starting to have a farm of PCs running these things and a smaller farm of PCs at that, and you understand those architectures. And again, it's usually an architecture that's a COTS-based product, right? Commercial off the shelf. In the IT world has learned long ago, they've got some really hardened servers out there for airline reservations and medical and healthcare and stuff that really can't be accepted, errors cannot be accepted. That's kind of our talk, right? We also need to have uptime, 99.999, how many nines? And so there is hardware out there that does that. And the other cool thing is cloud architectures are possible. And I don't mean just accessing these apps from your home at 3 in the morning to fix something or adjust something, but far more than that. So we'll talk about some of that next. And this is actually what I would normally see if anybody has any questions, but I guess we'll wait to the end for that. I'm going to give you like six examples of real world applications that have migrated from physical to virtual today. These are all applications that you could download today from different companies. So we're going to talk about codec apps, phone apps, processing, streaming, console apps, and virtual sound card just a little bit. These are a couple of neat products. Audio Compass is one of them, and Source Connect by a company called Source Elements. Or is it Source Elements makes it, and it's called Source Connect. They're both IP-based codecs that are made to run on your laptop or on a computer, maybe on a Windows box, or on a. It also runs on a Mac OS. And it's single to multi-channel IP bidirectionally with different codecs that you can plug in. So you could be at a remote and using one of these things to send multi-channel audio back to your studio and getting return audio and comms back to you from the studio as long as you've got a computer at each end running this. They have a cloud service. They even have a free web plugin only service that you could actually go and start doing this today. It's free. It's limited as far as bandwidth and such, but it's still something to play with. And when I gave this presentation in Pittsburgh just a couple of weeks ago, I actually live in Pittsburgh. We have a lot of films being shot there, and it ends up the head of audio for their production for a company there called PMI Production Mover Production Media Inc. PMI. They use this stuff all the time for Hollywood types that need to get voiceover effects and retracking of voices for talent when they're in Pittsburgh. They use this. They don't use physical codecs anymore. They don't use Comrex products as much because they want the flexibility. And I should say like a BrickLink, by the way, is what I'm thinking of there because actually every product has their application. In fact, BrickLinks, if you guys haven't had it, some of you haven't played with IP codecs, BrickLinks are an awesome way to start. That's what I used to do when I used to do engineering for the NBA, National Basketball Association. And it was so cool. You could like have all the GUIs on your screen at one time in different windows and be, you know, these are different commentators taking and giving feeds worldwide. And literally every commentator needs a new connection. When you do that, you just connect, you know, tap of the mouse, and by the time you let go, the connection's already made. You've already got heuristics being tracked. It's like, it is fast and smooth. So IP is a very trusted mechanism, I think, now for connections. ISDN, we all know what that really stands for. It still does nothing. So, yeah, it's sadly, it's never really taken off in the States, and now it's on the wane and getting hard and expensive to maintain or to get at all. So it's going IP is what I'm saying. There's so many products by so many brands out there. And Audio Compass, like I said, is another product. So consider. Great. Okay, this one is really cool. This is a UK company called Broadcast Bionics. We've all heard of their telephone interfaces for the physical spaces where you've got a box and you've got a lot of phone lines going into it and you connect it in there into your mixer. This is a virtual product based on the same technology that Skype uses, SIP, if you've heard, you know, you've heard of that protocol, voice over IP, but with a I don't know. I think there's probably more of an engineering person in here that could speak exactly how the difference is between SIP and IP. But So with this, Broadcast Bionics actually can connect you to a server in the cloud or an interface like a gateway where the actual public switch telephone network to IP connectivity is translated for you. You don't have to bring in the PSTN cables and wiring into your studios. You literally could be at a remote with this product screening callers and putting them on the air by just an IP connection to your remote site. You don't need physical phone lines anymore to do that. And they even have a 12 line now. This is 6 line, but they also have a 12 line. It's called Solo. And the cool thing with this, if you need it, you download it, you make an arrangement with some SIP, PSTN gateway provider, and you're good to go, and you just need some phone numbers. So it's pretty neat. This is a really powerful digital tool called Stereo Tool. It's made by a guy named Hans van Zupten, and Omnia is licensing this now to put in their air processing. One of the cool features about this is something called a declipper, where you can take really, truly distorted, squashed audio, square wave-looking stuff, and this reinserts dynamics into it. I don't know how it works, but everyone who has used this thing screams about how powerful it is. It's the beauty of digital technology in processing that allows you to do that. So, and that's running on a Windows box. You can see there, you know, a little Windows logo or a close button. This is even more reality, but this is Orban running on an air chain, right? This is a tool that many radio stations are using now for on-air processing, and they're trusting a Windows box to do it. So, you know, that's kind of validation right there. If you lose your air chain processor, you've got a big problem. So obviously customers buy this figuring it's pretty reliable. And this is a neat product. This guy actually, Greg Oganowski, he's actually from Michigan, my home state, but Streams is the product, and the company's Modulation Index in California. This is a multi-stream encoding application, so you take audio, routing into it from different sources. If it's on a PC, we'd recommend AES-67 to get the audio in there efficiently from your network, and then you can spit it out to different streaming encoding providers that you may have for your different content. And you may have different bit rates and, you know, different channels, you know, multi-channel, single-channel kind of stuff. This can handle all of that. So it's quite the Swiss Army knife for stream encoding. And again, it's called Streams. This is a virtual radio mixer product, which runs on a touchscreen environment. It can run on a tablet or on a laptop. It doesn't even have to have a touch interface. But in this device, you can bring in up to 24 multi-channel audio sources, whether they be AES-67 or USB or local audio playback from different sources on the machine, and mix them. And then it's got three stereo buses on it, each with dual outputs, parallel outputs, so you can feed a whole lot of stuff, including regular headsets and cue and record buses and program and stuff. So, you know, no faders here at all. So, and the other cool thing about a mixer like this is if you've got a guest or a host that's running their own board and they're not too comfortable with it, you can kind of look in and see how things are going, even remotely. So if they say, no, I swear that fader's up, you're like, mm-hmm. You can say, no, that's the one next to it is up. So, or they forgot to turn the channel on. Okay, yeah, so, and that kind of gets to the next topic. Some of you are like, touch, multi-touch. Yeah, right, that's for the movies. That looks great on the Enterprise, you know, and it does look great on the Enterprise, but it's not reality, right? But, you know, the plane that got me over here, well, actually, I don't know about that plane, but there's a lot of planes now with glass cockpit technologies, avionics that are touchscreens, real things. And so, you know, what Bones is doing here, what Bones is doing on a bridge, in fact, I don't really know. He belongs in sick bay, but anyway. But this is a real front-of-house mixer by a company called Waves. It's called the Emotion, with an E, Emotion, well, I guess that's how you spell Emotion, LV1. And it's a touchscreen mixing application where the bottom part is the hands-on kind of GUI. And if you touch a fader strip, you notice what pops up here is a detail of what that circuit or that channel is engaged in and what kind of audio is routed to it, what kind of processing you're doing, what kind of destination sends you've got coming out of that. And then you let go of the fader and that big GUI goes away and whatever else you have as your default screen can come back, and that's probably channel monitoring or something like that. Well, the cool thing, too, is if somebody spilled a Coke or a pop in your, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 console, you're going to be in trouble. If somebody spills a Coke in this, well, maybe you've got a plastic little cover over it, and they won't even notice. It'll just come right off, slide right off. And if it does ruin it, well, you go to Best Buy and buy a new monitor. And again, it doesn't have to be touchscreen. You'd want it to be multi-touch. That's more efficient. But it could just be a regular computer interface if you really just were comfortable using a mouse. So touch is real. This is that virtual sound card kind of product I mentioned. And this is many manufacturers have this. And this is, again, a very useful tool to get AOIP on and off a computer and routing it within the computer between whatever applications you have on the computer and the outside world. So they're pretty simple, really. This is like a more advanced version of a virtual sound card that includes audio routing as a patch bay within a Windows environment so that you could actually route audio from different sources. And you could, like, for instance, take the program out of Skype, route it through a little bit of processing, and then route it through an audio recorder all within the Windows environment with this. And then from that, do a parallel route and route it out over AES-67. Heck, you could even take the audio out of Skype, route it directly over AES-67 to a separate computer doing processing, and run it back through AES-67 and back through this back into Skype and send that back out to the caller. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do with this stuff so easily. And notice no real patch cords are needed, meaning it's virtual. You can save all kinds of snapshots. You can recall these things later. These snapshots can be triggered by humans or by clock or automation or other events. Once you go software, it gets pretty intriguing. So here, I'm going to give you some quick examples. Some of this stuff as soon as these come up, you'll be like, oh yeah, got that, because of the software you just saw. But imagine one box that's dedicated as just an HLS stream encoder. That's a computer, right? Running who knows what software. I mean, an operating system. Again, Windows probably. AES-67 coming in. You're running a couple of instances maybe of modulation indexes product or something like that and sending out your audio to your streaming providers. That's pretty straightforward. Another one might be like a multiprocessor, kind of like the Skype point I had just a minute ago, where you're processing all kinds of interesting audio that's running in your plant. And, you know, some hosts have their own kind of audio curves, and you want that to follow them wherever they go in the studio. And what if you're renovating one studio or the sprinkler head pops off and you got to run off to another one where you want that audio curve for that host to be in that room? Well, you could have one box that does that host curve all the time, and it doesn't care where they are. Just route the packets. And this is kind of like, and if anybody here ever hear of Luci Live, L-U-C-I? Okay, that awesome. So you know that's another great IP codec based. It's a smartphone application that has program quality audio bidirectionally that you over a IP network back to your studio connect to a PC that's running a counterpart piece of software for that. This is kind of an example of what like several Luci Live instances. This could be a Luci Live server. Where you're using it to connect to people out in the field. Now, those are not consumer smartphone indicators. Those are like your news people doing reports, and you're connecting them through the cloud and then through your IP codec connecting to your plant. It's pretty elegant, actually. This is kind of where it gets even more fun, I think, is where you have a computer in there in your studio, and it maybe it's got playout software running on it. Maybe that's a separate machine. But you're interfacing to your guests and your host with headphones, mics, and speakers, like you always have to do. But you also have a tablet there, a tablet that you use as your mixing surface instead of a physical console. It frees up some interesting things. You could walk around your studio and mix the show with a tablet. And sound reinforcement people have been doing this for many years now. I want to say a decade, but they haven't been out that long. But audio engineers, I've done occasional live sound, and I'm walking around the stage with my tablet mixing all the foldback monitors for the talent, and also walking around the house and seeing how it sounds if sometimes at your mix position you don't have good, you know, good audible, good location. It helps to be able to walk around. So that's kind of interesting there where you're mixing. And it's also some comments, guests are impressed by big consoles. Some are a little bit inundated by it. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, what is this big thing? So that may actually make the studio look cooler too. But imagine taking, if that's already a tablet running an operating system that you can populate with applications, why not just throw all those applications on the tablet in the first place? And then you can be doing processing. You can have your IP codec. You can have your phoner interface by the Broadcast Bionic product, and mixing all on a touch surface this size, right? One Ethernet connection to get to your audio AES-67 audio breakout box, And you'll split that off, of course, to an IP connection that's attached to your infrastructure. And that's how you're getting audio out of your studio. This all of a sudden can also become a disaster recovery type of solution, where literally in a backpack, a couple of microphones, a couple of headsets, in an IP connection is all you need to go on the air. Because on that tablet, let's assume you've got some playout software, maybe with a specific library that you've kind of made for evergreen content. You know, if you had to vacate your studios right away, just grab this bag and run. And if maybe your link to your transmitter is IP-based over a public internet, maybe that's a backup. Just make sure you change your passwords. You know, you could even go on the air over the public internet from anywhere. So if you had to vacate your town, if you can still access your transmitter through IP, then here's your studio. And if it's in a backpack. And it looks a whole lot like that, maybe. Sorry, that was an advertisement. How did that get in there? But anyway, here we go. Another great example of where things might be going. And this, all the stuff will take time. Nothing happens overnight. But this is an experience that we've had with Swedish Radio, where they really did want to get really bullish and aggressive about new ways of doing work in their studios. This guy is on the air. That's their main air studio, and that's their on-air light. It's a little green light instead of a big red light. I thought that was interesting. Two displays. Both are touch. The one on the left is used for Twitter and Facebook and news threads and email, stuff like that. The one on the right, which would be his left, is the one that is his broadcast control cockpit. And what that looks like is pretty neat. It's all touch-based. It also uses... everyone here has probably heard of AutoMix, Dan Dugan's really awesome AutoMix engine. Okay, so there's AutoMix. Strangely, when the patent expired, I think the next day our products offered it. It was really weird how that happened. But we're friends. I know this to be true. We're good friendship there. Brilliant guy, what he invented. And so in this environment, the mics are all on AutoMix. And if you haven't heard of AutoMix, it's where you prioritize each of the mics. The more important mics, you give higher priorities. Guests or playout would be lower priority. So when the host speaks, levels are adjusted quickly, automatically, seamlessly, all intending to provide still a constant sum gain level output. So it is truly an auto mixer. I did some stuff with our gear for a public radio station back in April where we took it live when they had six or seven open mics in a hot space, very hot space. Their engineer was dreading it because there's no way you can work that many faders because you never know when the host is going to go to one of these guests. And it was a news council thing, or a news group, so everything gets kind of argumentative sometimes depending on the topic. And so we just used AutoMix, and there's no touching faders for an hour. So, it just turns down what you don't need, and lets those who matter step on top of those who need to be quiet sometimes. It's great for cutting donuts, too, by the way. So, in the middle there, his playout system is, that's by somebody else. That's just through, I'm not sure if it's HTML or CSS or what, but it's how they embed that in there. And what's neat, too, because it's digital, is that's a button that's clearly running down. It's red. That's their style of how they do things is red. We're live. Give me attention. That's counting down and telling him how long until that song is over. And he knows what's next in the traffic list. And that's his thumbs resting in the corners about ready to hit something else. Granted, the microphone, it's a little thin. It's not a Neumann or a nice Electro Voice. But, of course, that's what processing is for, right? You can make it sound bigger. So, anyway, that's kind of where things may be going, because when you look back at the big physical consoles and all these faders, and when there were engineers available to run them, that was one thing. But things have evolved so quickly into such more of a digital landscape. In a random, fast, unplanned kind of show, producers are pulling their hair out more and more because things are changing on the fly. A digital environment may, in fact, support that workflow more directly than the old school consoles that we were used to. When I started WJR in the 80s, those were knobs. I don't remember the model number, but that was and you could feel the detents, right? It was some okay, and as I'm getting close to wrapping up here, I just wanted to throw out one kind of bigger vision of what an infrastructure might look like across your whole topology. Imagine in a studio's environments where you have computers that are running the applications instead of physical boxes, so you have more flexibility, more software assignable audio routing. You can entirely change the routing of your plant by just a flick of a switch or a press of a soft button if you needed to. But studios that have a smaller footprint of equipment that's in them, studios that are more nimble, studios that you can take on the road with you. IP connections give you, of course, more connectivity with your folks in the field, whether it's audio or metadata or comms or just texting back and forth. And then you have, and that's over some wide area network. And frankly, that they could seem as if they're next door or the other side of the planet. When it's IP, it doesn't really matter. But in your central server, the big thing here on the right, that's maybe something running in your TOC, or that's maybe something running on Amazon Web Services, or that's maybe running in a couple of different places. Maybe you have a station group. Maybe you've got their cluster running as a backup at your place, and you've got a cluster at your place dedicated as a backup to theirs. So everyone's got more disaster recovery kind of bases covered if you start moving in a cloud-based environment. And if you have a main technical operations center and that goes down for some reason, if you do have it all backed up, content, playout, et cetera, EQ curves, IP codecs, everything, at an Amazon Web Services type of thing, then you've got a whole lot more resiliency there again that you don't have now today. So, your hardware costs may go down, your services costs may go up, but ultimately we think you'll save money in moving into a more of a virtualized world. We don't know all this yet, right? This is kind of uncharted territory. That might be your next architecture. And one thing, you know that I keep talking about, that's a PC over there, that's a PC over there. And then you remember this earlier image I had of all these boxes in the rack. Well, if we're just replacing those with PCs, now we've got a bunch of PCs in the rack, and they get just as noisy and just as hot. So no, we're not really talking about that. Thanks to the faster processors, parallel processing, and the products like VMware, you are able to virtualize a lot of instances of computers running on a same small box. So there's a lot of efficiencies there. And those boxes are designed to be arrayed such that they are parallel with other mirrored versions, even in your own rack space, so you have resiliency built in. Virtualized, really. It's, again, the IT world has been doing it for a long time. We're just processing bits of audio now instead of, you know, credit card numbers, right? So consider, virtualization, it's software, it's not hardware. So when you want to touch that dial and knob, all of a sudden you're moving a slider. But because of that, you've got software control. You can save and recall snapshots much more quickly. It's scalable. Software, if you need a new feature, maybe you're doing a show for a certain week or a month, you can rent that feature from a company that gives you a software key that unlocks a capability that after the next month and you don't need it, you're done paying for it. The accounting guys might actually like that. And redundant, blades, these things are hot swappable arrays. So even if you have a problem just locally on your TOC server, that doesn't mean that you're off. The VM system is designed with these hypervisors to be able to track and look for delay or errors and switch. So, and we think reduce cost and complexity. This actually does have a more elegant feel to it. So I guess I might say in closing, remember that rack we had at the beginning. In a few years from now, maybe your future TOC may look a little bit different. It may look like this. So, yeah, we'll have to add some blinking lights to it or something to make it look more, But, and then you can go back to putting that under your desk. So that's it. That's it. So thank you very much for your time today. Any questions? Any thoughts, comments? It's also cool to say I'm full of it because, some of these ideas, we really don't know where they're going to go, and these are just predictions.
Chris just told me to behave. Really?
Uh-oh.
Really? You say this is, the future. Future is now. Actually already did this for a 35-station radio network. It's four servers running VMware as the hypervisor. Can be done with Hyper-V as well. But this is 35 radio stations. The jocks are all over the country and the world for that matter. They're logging in using a VPN client. So everything is local to them, so to speak. And they are doing their shows live from Germany, Norway, Texas, Minneapolis. The data center lives in Ramsey, Minnesota, which is north of Minneapolis. It's already been done.
That's cool.
It's four servers, literally eBay parts, because, again, it's shifting bits. These servers are in retirement for what we're trying to do with them. Again, VMware knows to find the errors, moves everything around. Everything, the microphone, the mixer, audio codec, phone interface, everything virtualized. So it's 35 radio stations, so it's 35 control rooms, 15 workstations for music scheduling, traffic, and administration, plus there's just one little lone PC that came off of eBay for like $50 that is literally the administrator role for all those servers. So if anything fails, you still have a way in. Oh, and by the way, the firewall and the SAN that holds all the data mm-hmm. is also virtualized. So this is something that I've already done.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah.
And the budget was under $5,000 for the hardware. Software, different story.
I got to ask you some questions. Oh, yeah, well, software is licensing is
licensing and software as a service. Have you ever tried to do Adobe Creative Cloud in a virtual environment? It's kind of a pain. but this is the reality. A lot of the old guys, and jocks alike want the tactile feedback of a mixer. Tangibility factor. They want to be able to touch something. So the touch surfaces was one of the big hurdles because I'm not providing touch surfaces to everybody. I just give them an appliance. Here, plug this in. It'll call home. However, there is a devised method where you can use plain MIDI controllers, mm-hmm. DJ controllers.
Yeah, JL Cooper stuff, right?
Exactly.
Great stuff.
That's on their dime. They want that. I gave you a mixer already, man. But these are things that are already here. But realize what this industry already exists, whether you like it or not. It's called podcasting. Podcasters don't buy giant mixers. They don't buy audio codecs.
Yeah, kids these days rather use touch interfaces, period.
They're
used to it
on
their devices.
They want an iPad and a webcam.
Yeah.
But they want the professional grade stuff that we have.
I think, yeah, physical faders are just a legacy of how we've done things.
Exactly.
But if you start it over today,
it's the way we've always done things before.
Yeah.
But now newer generations, they're the iPad generation. You know, they're used to multi-touch surfaces. They're used to USB ports and Ethernet ports being on their microphones. That reality is already here.
Just a simple question, and thank you. That was really fascinating.
That
virtual console app, is that one of yours?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Cool. I'll have to check out the demo app of that.
Yeah, actually, if you dig into that URL at the bottom, you can download it.
Yeah. So. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. I don't want to make it an advertisement, right, but it's that, you know, but yeah. Any other thoughts, questions?
Nope.
Cool. Thanks, everybody.